Welcome to Close the Door and Come Here, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast with heavy leanings towards our two favorite characters, Jaime and Brienne.
Man, there was a bear up there, all black and brown and covered in hair.
Hi everyone, I'm Kama, and you can find me at Kama Splice on Blue Sky Social, and today I'm joined by Devin.
Hey, this is Devin, GD Harpo on Twitter.
And Chicky.
Hey, I am Chicky, on Blue Sky Social.
So today we'll be talking about Sam 1 from A Feast of Crows. If you're joining us for the first time, we spoil everything, book and show. I don't think we have to have trigger warnings, always a plus. So this is a very long chapter.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff going on in here, even though there's not a ton of action. But we begin with Sam in the library at Castle Black, and he's reading.
Can I just say from the beginning, this chapter feels like the biggest George R. R. Martin self-insert ever. In all of Sam's chapters, this has to be the most self-insert,
oh my God, yes,
killing one.
It's so just whole, him.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Because, like, Sam has been reading for what sounds like at least 24 hours.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember the last time he ate. He's been reading book after book, and it's like he can't stop. Like, he'll come to, like, the end, what he seems to be the end, and he's like, oh, I'll just see a little bit what's in the next one, and he just keeps on going. The chair is, like, cutting into his butt. I mean, like, he's been there so long. Also, this library, my God, this library needs desperate attention. It's filled with dust. There's mouse excrement everywhere. There is a mouse literally sitting there eating his food, or what's left of his food.
Yeah, I don't understand this. Like, he clearly has the option to take the books out of the library. Like, he's not required to stay in the library to read them. So I'm just sitting there going, why are you staying there? Just take everything out and go read it somewhere else.
Right? I do love when he grabs one of the books and uses it as a weapon to kill the mouse. But that's, oh, it's kind of gross. But, anyhow, and there's probably stuff I'm missing in here about the books he's reading and the clues in there, but I didn't take those notes because I suck. but he finally leaves the room or the library, and he's making his way up some steps, and we learn he's hearing the sound of, like, construction. And our new Lord Commander, John, has got people building what sounds like 24/7. To repair and replace the stairway that got destroyed in the battle. So that's going on. And as he's walking up these steps, huffing and puffing, he's thinking a lot about dragons. He's wondering, at first I thought this seemed to be a little random, but then given what he's been reading, it makes more sense, I think.
Yeah, it is almost like George cut something that would have given that a little bit more context. I think you are supposed to imply that has been reading about dragons and how they might relate to the others or something. But
because, like, he's going up the steps and wondering, hey, when good Queen Alysanne was here hundreds of years ago, did her dragon leave an egg behind?
Yeah,
find
yeah.
One and dragon stone, and how would they bring it to life if they did? And I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah, it feels out of the blue.
Okay, I'm glad it wasn't just me.
Yeah, definitely wasn't. It was almost as if that part was supposed to be when he was still reading, like when he was still actually in the library.
Yeah, I really think George cut something that gave this more context, mm-hmm. and he just never quite filled it back in well enough to reshape it, I guess.
So he runs into Ed, or Ed runs into him and tells him that John wants to talk to him. John is currently speaking to Gilly, and he's going to want to talk to Sam after. And he also runs into Gran and Pip. And there's some more, like, exposition. Like, John has everyone, whether they're a ranger or not. Like, if you're the cook, you're doing this. Everyone's out there doing mandatory archery practice every day. And we keep hearing these little things that John is doing. And I think this is one of the first hints that there's some negative consequences to the new Lord Commander here and his new attitude, because
yeah,
Bran and Pip and Ned are a little put out because John, it sounds like they think, you know, John feels he's above them. He doesn't want to talk to them socially. He's very distant. And I mean, Sam defends him, but I mean, I think this is the first hint that John is like isolating himself.
Yes. Yeah. Something has clearly changed. There's been a sea change.
Sam runs into Gilly leaving, and she's very upset, although he doesn't quite understand why. This is at the beginning of me really hating John at this moment for what John is about to do to Gilly. But Sam goes in to meet with John, who's writing to King Tommen. It's one of those things where everybody knows it sounds like it's not going to work, but they have to do it anyway. He's basically trying to assure Tommen of the watch's neutrality, despite the fact that Stannis and all his men are at the wall.
I mean, like, you know, you can tell John knows. He's like, this. I think what this comes down to is, look, I know this doesn't look good, and it doesn't look good. It does not look good the way that Stannis has literally moved into Castle Black. Like, there's no defense for this, and, like, especially since he's literally, you know, Ned Stark's son. Like, you know, there's obviously never going to be great relations between him as Lord Commander and any, you know, Lannister or Lannister progeny on the throne. But, I mean, like, especially in this circumstance, it's just like, you know, but it's so funny how he knows he has to go through the motions, you know? He's like, well, we have to do this, but it's pointless. Here we go.
It's not like, you know, Stannis sent, I don't know, you know, 50 men to him and left them. No, no, Stannis is there. No. His wife is there. His kid is there.
His entire camp.
is there.
They're all there.
It doesn't look good. It doesn't look super good from the outside that the Night's Watch is not involved in the affairs of men.
John is sounding pretty salty. I think this is all natural given the situation, what he thinks has happened to Bran. He makes the comment like, you know, Bran is dead, Tommen's alive, you know, Sam's sitting there like feeling incredibly guilty that he can't tell John that Bran is in fact alive. And also what House Lannister has done to his entire family. And also, like, he makes this allusion to dealing with Stannis because, you do one thing for Stannis and it's never enough. Like, there's always something more he wants.
Right.
And then Sam asks why Gilly was upset, and John tells him it had to do with Val and Mance, but he's not really clear. And then there's some discussion about how Melisandre is looking for King's blood to wake the sleeping dragon. And there's actually, I should have quoted it, but there's a pretty funny line. Like, John is like, you know, I don't know where she's going to find this dragon. Does she have a dragon? What the hell? You know? John says he's sending Gilly and the boy away.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, as angry as I am for Gilly, like, you do see John's position here, and it's like he has zero choices to try to save this baby's life. He has no, like, this is his best option. This is the best way to sneak the baby out. But
and
it is.
Spoiler alert, this is what he's going to be doing. I guess we should just bring this up now. It comes up later in the chapter, but what Sam does not know is that what John has told Gilly is he's basically swapping the babies, that she's supposed to take Mance's kid with her and leave her son back, you know, with whoever's tending the kids. Like, so they're swapping the kids to protect, you know, Mance's son, because it's so funny because Mance is a king, but it's not a hereditary kingdom, right? It's not, you know, they elect their leaders, you know. Anyhow.
It's It's just, it's funny with Melisandre how it's like she's just the technicality, like just, you know, technically king's blood, you know, it doesn't and really.
Anybody could say they're a king.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But it's interesting because you almost feel like with this conversation, John planting the seeds, I think he probably assumes that at some point Gilly will tell Sam what he's done or something. And you can see John almost like pre-planting the seeds for like, please understand, I have a reason I'm doing this, you know, like just putting it in there, you know, like talking about Aemon, but really, you know, obviously meaning Mance's baby.
So we learn that the reason Sam's been doing all this reading is because he's been directed to learn as much as he can about the others. And it sounds, I mean, first of all, I mean, we've already established the library is kind of a filthy mess. The state of the books in the library is against them. Sam, you know, flat out says a lot of the knowledge is probably not in the books and shares that, like, when the first men, what they used to record their knowledge were runes on rocks, and that what they know about them in the present day comes from accounts from thousands of years ago, right? Like, so it's like, you know, time, thousands of years have passed. People like converted these into stories, but they're not even sure they're accurate. And we learn a few things, like Sam has apparently the children of the forest used to give the watch a regular, like annual present of obsidian daggers. And there's some little tidbits, most of which I think they already know. The others either come when it's very cold, or maybe they cause the cold. They're not sure. They write on dead bears, dire wolves, mammoths, and something called ice spiders. I don't even want to know what those are. And everything else, it's all basically stuff they already know. But there is a mention of dragon steel, which both of them think could be Valyrian steel.
Yeah, which is probably one of the biggest nuggets here.
Yeah.
As far as the others' lore.
Sam says he needs more time, and John is like, there is no more time. And
so
he shares,
One thing I did find interesting, though, was that Sam says he's only been able to actually read records back to one that, like starts counting from, like, this a commander of the Night's Watch in the 600s, and John is supposed to be the 999th. So it's like he's literally saying he's like, I only can find about a third of all the history that there is here. So he's like, I cannot go back far enough to actually get to people who would actually know the answers to these questions.
Yeah, it's very interesting stuff. And I mean, I think we're also getting a hint, like, you know, like this is the kind of stuff George loves, the research and how it's done and all this stuff.
Yes.
And as someone who is a librarian in my day job, I really do love all this, you know, how history is recorded, what you can find, you know, how you can't take everything you read as God's truth, that you have to think about, like, okay, you know, would these people really have known? Is it interpreted, etc.?
A little historiography situation.
Yeah.
I think there's also in this, oh gosh, that's like a good lesson for, you know, how the discernment that is required of a writer not to put everything that they've learned in their research into their finished product that George sometimes has problems with.
And then basically John's like, well, there is no more time. And the grand plan he shares is he's sending Gilly and Aemon and Sam to Old Town. And Sam is sort of incredulous about Aemon because he's incredibly aged and kind of frail, and also they kind of need a maester. And John's like, Aemon has king's blood, and arguably way more legitimate king's blood than I would say Mance's kid.
Absolutely the most legitimate king's blood, like, probably still alive.
Yes. Like, on the whole continent. You're trying to get a dragon. That would be
the guy, right? Yeah. He's actually a Targaryen, you know.
He's Targaryen, yep. So.
So I guess the plan, if I get this right, is they're first going to Eastwatch, where they're going to pick up Darian, and then they're going to sail to Braavos. And then John's like, well, you can either send Gilly and the kid to Horn Hill, or you could get, you know, Aemon will get her a job working at the Citadel as a servant. And it sounds like John is also doing some succession planning because he wants Sam to become a maester, so he becomes their maester.
Yes, yes. I mean, something that, I'll be really honest with you, I don't know why Mormont hadn't thought of this 15 years before. I mean, like, obviously.
Yeah, you think?
They needed to have somebody ready to go.
Already have this in place.
Yeah.
And especially since, I mean, even with a dwindling force, you got one dude. One aged
really
dude
old for
how many
time.
Hundreds of men?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and he's their primary doctor. So it's like, you know, like, this is just not good stewardship. I don't know what happened there. I mean, like, they say in this chapter, Aemon's 102. I mean, how do you let him get that old without, you, like, know, having a replacement?
40 years ago, somebody should have been thinking, 50 years ago, somebody should have been thinking, hey, you know, maybe we should have another guy waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
And then even the backup, who I would take as the backup at this point, is Claudius, and he's it's like partially blind. I don't know why this is set up the way it is.
Yeah.
And there hadn't been any kind of succession for a maester.
Yeah. It's almost beyond belief. It's like,
particularly given how long it takes. Cause it sounds like to get each, like, a new link around the chain, like when we learn more about that, like that's just not a really quick thing. So, like, it's not like Sam would go and be back rather quickly.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, even if George had done his 5-year time jump that he wanted to do, I still don't know if that would have been enough for, like, a normal maester's training. I mean, I don't know. Well, George, I'm sure he'll find some.
I mean, there probably would have been a way to get Sam back, even if he wasn't fully trained. But Sam is also, as this is all being, like, told to him, Sam is having what I would call almost a psychotic break. he's there's so much going on. Like, he's babbling about, like, how, you know, he's thinking about the journey. He'll have to be on the ship for forever. He's telling John, like, they cut people, so he's gonna have to do gross anatomy. But inside, he's thinking about the chain and all of these things that his father did to him, which I had totally tripped on.
So we get the feeling that basically Randall Tarley, like, chained him up in a closet somewhere for several days when he said he wanted to be a maester as a child. Is that what the general vibe is here?
From this little passage.
Yes.
No, father, please. I won't speak of it again. I swear by the seven. Let me out. Please let me out. And I did edit this a little bit for time. Sam put a hand to his throat. He could almost feel the chain there choking him. My lord, the Citadel, they make you cut up corpses there. They make you wear a chain about your neck. If it is chains you want, come with me. For 3 days and three nights, Sam had sobbed himself to sleep, manacled hand and foot to a wall. The chain around his throat was so tight it broke the skin, and whenever he rolled the long way in his sleep, it would cut off his breath. I cannot wear a chain.
Oh my God, this man.
This has really never registered to me till this time reading it. And I was like, this is new. Like, goodness.
I totally forgot. I must have skipped this because I was horrified.
I'm going to remember this the next time I see someone defending Randall Tarley somewhere.
So John is kind of surprised at the reaction because he thought this is what Sam would be good at and would want. And Sam is, I think, just throwing things at him. And he does share a little bit about his father. And he says, John, I cannot disobey my father. John, he'd said, but John was gone. It was Lord Snow who faced him now. Gray eyes, hard as ice. You have no father, said Lord Snow. Only brothers, only us. Your life belongs to the Night's Watch.
Oh, mercy.
And then Sam finally says he'll try, and John is like, you won't try, you will obey.
Ah, John. We want to love you, John. Ah, God, it's so rough. It's so rough in these chapters.
And then, I mean, John leaves, and he's thinking, like, I mean, he's still, I really think he is not, I mean, he's not collected. He's thinking he could hide, he could run away. He's terrified. And he tries to share his fears with Aemon, and Aemon says, well, his own father had objections, and his grandfather was the one who, you know, sent him off. And he tells John, you can do this. And basically, I don't think Sam has a choice here.
No, he doesn't. I mean, I don't think, I think we all know when he gets there, he'll be fine, probably. But, you know, you understand why the traumatic experience that he had makes him not want to go.
So the last little bit of the chapter, and then I guess we can discuss. So they're leaving the next day. I mean, John is wasting no time here. But again, there's Melisandre probably ready to, you know, start bashing babies in or whatever she's going to be doing. And he's on a horse. There's a couple of wagons and I guess horses to pull them. And there's some men. And of course, George has to tell us, you know, that they're bringing ham and all this other stuff. That no one cares, George, what they're bringing on this trip. Gilly is actively crying, and she tells John to make sure there's a wet nurse for the other baby and not to name him till he's two. And she makes John promise, and he tells her he will, and he calls her my lady. And I loved Gilly here. Don't you call me that. I'm a mother, not a lady. I'm Craster's wife and Craster's daughter and a mother.
Poor Gilly. Poor little Gilly. This is so heartbreaking. Just like, I realize that these books are just full of these little heartbreaking moments, but Jesus.
I mean, she's being forced to leave her baby in very uncertain and dangerous circumstances. She's being separated from her baby by, what, thousands of miles, with the likelihood she will never get back. And probably never be reunited with her actual kid. And she's going off to a, you know, like she's been in the north her entire, beyond the wall her entire life. You know, she's going to go to the south and just be fine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a massive sacrifice she's being forced to make.
And has to take the other baby and nurse it and still be a mother to it. Like it's... Oh, goodness. Like, well, like again, while just having to leave hers behind, but still having to be a mother for this baby that she is going to care for.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask. It's an awful lot to ask. And it's, it is horrible. This is horrible. This is really, truly terrible.
Do we have any mail?
Yes, we do have a few pieces of mail. So our first one from CardinalGirl75 on Discord. On your first read, did you accept John's explanation for why Gilly was so upset? Or did you suspect it was something more than that?
I am ashamed to say I think I, just as I spaced on Sam's being like physically, you know, locked up with a chain, I think I didn't get it. I think I just sort of didn't quite understand. Maybe I thought she was sad because she was going to have to leave and go south. But I don't think I really clocked it.
I don't remember. I doubt I knew. I don't remember.
Yeah, I definitely don't. I don't remember, but I don't think I did. I think I did just, oh, she's sad. She's having to leave. That's kind of where I left it. Yeah. On first read. So, yeah. Our next piece of mail is from Buck O'Hare on Discord. What's the oldest book in the library you would have liked to have read?
In that library?
Yeah, in that library. I would really want to be, like, I would want it to be the oldest one I could get my hand on. like as close to the beginning as possible. When they did like really truly begin writing things out. Cause like I wonder if there's anything like the actual creation of the wall, like is that lost somewhere down in the records?
Like Bran the Builder 8.
Yes. Which they weren't writing at that time. So
just runes,
but gosh, I want something from back then.
Yeah. I might be tempted to look at some of the, like, interesting periods of history, like, you know, like, say, during Aegon's conquest or something. Like, those might be interesting just to hear, like, what they were hearing at the wall.
Yeah, I'm honestly very curious. I'm still curious. Like, George keeps giving us all this Targaryen crap, and I'm way more interested in, like, how Stark, you know, like, what that was like or what that family was like. More information about them, I think, would probably be, but I don't know how old that goes, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to look, I want to say in the chapter he's named, I'm trying to look right now. None of these really sounds all that appealing. Like, Maester Tomax's Dragon King, being a history of the House Targaryen from exile to apotheosis with consideration of the life and death of dragons. No, that doesn't really sound that interesting to me.
Oh, yeah, agreed. Our next piece of mail is from a stranger giving the strange a welcome. I'm from Tumblr. Man, Sam's chapter really brought home to me how much of Sam's cowardice is actually just fucking PTSD from what his dad did to him as a kid. Like, I guarantee that if Randall Tarly had just been left alone with his son, he wouldn't have been like a warrior who's completely afraid of blood or anything like that, but he certainly wouldn't have the strong physical responses he has to the slightest negative stimuli that he does in these books. Also, seeing the beginning of John's burnout just confirms what my life experience has already told me, which is that the reason there seems to be no good managers out there is because whenever you do get a good manager, the job just completely burns them out and they become miserable and quit / are assassinated. Do you think that John made the right choice with swapping the babies? I really feel for Gilly's pain. But on the other hand, I super think John has called it in terms of getting Mance's kid the fuck away from Melisandre.
I don't know that John is burning out. I think John is making some decisions based on, like, he's one of several characters in the last two books who make decisions based on, like, a saying. And like, you know, Aemon's bury the boy, which I think comes up in a successive chapter. I think that's the problem. A lot of his decisions are great on paper. Like, I think it makes sense on paper for what he's doing with the babies. I think it makes sense on paper for what he's doing with Sam and Aemon. But I think there's factors he's not thinking about. And I think he just keeps shutting himself off emotionally, or showing any kind of humanity to his men. And I think that's the bigger problem.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, This is the lesser of several evil choices that John has to make here, and that this is clearly the cleanest way to save Mance's baby's life. So it's like, it's hard to be too angry with him for going, okay, well, this is what has to happen, and here's what everybody needs to sacrifice to make it happen. You know, I mean, there's definitely an aspect there of, you know, just making the cold, hard decisions that, you know, sometimes leaders have to make, and I totally get that. But at the same time, it's like, you don't know if John really appreciates what he's doing to Gilly here. I mean, I know that he knows that it's bad. I know he's trying to appease her and everything, but it's like, oh God, like, do you understand what you've done to her?
So do you think he could have gotten away with baby sending the baby and the aunt whose name I keep screwing up?
Val.
Yeah, to send them along with the entourage going to Old Town?
No, because like he says, Stannis has decided that Val is a princess, even though that's 100% not how the free folk work. But he's decided that, and that this is how he's going to, like, unite the northern lords with the free folk and make them accept the fact that the free folk are going to settle.
Okay, but what about sending the baby with someone, you know, both kids?
But Stannis won't let the baby go. John knows he would have it would be a toe-to-toe with Stannis over this baby. Okay. And which is very obvious. Melisandre's not going to let this baby go. I mean, we saw what Davos had to do to get rid of what's his face that I can't remember his name?
Edric.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's what you have to do to save a kid from Stannis and Melisandre. And I think John probably intuitively understands this, and I'm sure they've been hearing, well, we know that they've been hearing the stories of the burnings and stuff. I mean, this is by far the most elegant way. You sneak him out, no one knows that he's gone until the time comes when you can reveal it and say, oh, this is not actually Mance's kid. So there's no point in burning him, you know, which I hope works. But I don't know. I think this is obviously the best way. This is the most guaranteed way to get this baby out safely and guarantee that he goes so far away that Stannis can't get at him. And the other thing is, you know, we don't know for sure what deal John might have made with Mance, but I have an inkling that the baby's safety is probably part of it.
Part of it, you know? Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very complicated and tangled thing, but I mean, like, you can come up with counterfactuals. Maybe you could have done it. It's like, well, John has only so much time to devote to this conundrum, and he's just like, okay, I got to save this baby's life. Here's what I can do.
Yeah, that's it. The other piece of it. It happened to having to happen so quickly.
Yeah. This is like when people like, you know, criticize Jaime for killing Aerys. They're like, he should have found another way to stop him, and he wouldn't have needed to kill him. And it's like, well, you know, there are 1,000 things that could go wrong with an alternate plan, and this is a pretty surefire plan. And it is surefire because we know that it works. So.
All right. Our next piece of mail is from Omo80 on Discord. So this is a comment back to our prologue episode of this book. The first time I read Pate's death, I also was confused. However, after reading the way Arya poisoned the merchant insurance guy, I think the alchemists used the same technique. Pate and Arya's victim both bit the coin, then died.
That is interesting. I just don't remember. I honestly don't remember enough about that.
We talked about it on our the last time we recorded that episode where Pate takes the coin, bites it, and then dies. And I mean, I always thought it was poison that way. I'm trying to remember the actual discussion we had when we recorded, though, but I don't remember.
Yeah, see, I should have reread those chapters to keep up with you guys.
I was laughing so hard during some of them. I was like, I felt like I dodged a bullet there.
All those aren't chapters to reread for fun. So this is comments from several people. I'm going to read all these. It's pretty funny. From Dory, Buckle Hair, Sadie, Pretty Thief, Wynn, Carnival 75, Oma 80, I Dream of Spring, Buckle Hair, and Natasha. All shared confusion over damp hair versus damn fair, and had a vigorous and hysterical discussion, which I find very funny. So here's some of the comments from Dory. What? Wait, I definitely thought it was damp hair because he's a water priest. Sadie, I mean, he probably does have damp hair, but there's no room for normative determinism here. Natasha, being my dyslexic self, I just read it as D. Hampier. I assumed it was his nickname due to him being creepy and obsessed with death, the Iron Islanders being totally the type to respect that in a priest. From Wynn, damp hair is a damn silly name for a water priest, if you ask me. More so than a Zorse being out and about. I'm not respecting a water priest whose name is damp hair. If a Catholic priest shows up and he's like, actually call me the dry wafer or the long robe, I'm kicking him out of the church. and our last one from Cardinal Girl 75. Should priests even have nicknames? Honestly, sounds pretentious to me. Oh, no one will take me seriously if I go by Aaron, so I better change my name to something ridiculous that my brothers will secretly laugh at behind my back, because you know they do.
Oh, yeah. My thing is, I thought it was damn fair. I'd still pronounce it damn fair in my head. But When someone finally told me, which I want to say was, I feel like it was on a podcast episode that I found out that it was damp hair. I feel like it was that late before I found out it was actually damp hair. Same. And I just remember thinking, it's kind of a weak it's kind of a weak nickname. Like, it just kind of, like, doesn't really portray drowning, just being damp. Like, I feel like it's just not great all around.
It doesn't have a lot of like oomph to it. It's not like, you know, Ivan the Terrible or something where you at least
know,
you know.
Yeah.
And I think
you might as well just call him the Moist or something. I mean, yeah.
Well, and I think it might have been Bucko, because I was laughing so hard on the Discord reading all those comments. I want to say one of the people who were named had shared a link to, I think, George reading a chapter, and he calls him Damp Air. So, you know. Anyhow.
God, George and his fucking names.
Is that it for mail?
Yes, that's all our mail.
Well, if you would like to send us some mail or a message, you can do so at closethedoorandcomehere.tumblr.com. You can email us at closethedoorand@gmail.com. You can now message us at closethedoorand.bluesky or Blue Sky Social. And we're also still the site formerly known as Twitter @DoorPodcast. Please like and review us wherever you listen, as it really helps new listeners find us. And lastly, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can do that by going to patreon.com/closethedoor. I'd like to thank all of the people who are currently our Patreon supporters. They help us keep the lights on. And with that, I'm closing the door. Get out.